This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Mistletoe, stockings, presents, sweets, all signs of the season. But for some, no holiday season is complete without the tradition of the holiday movie. And here to talk about those film favorites, we have Laura Boies, who is film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Welcome back, Laura. Good to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Frank.
Also with us is Marcia Gordon, professor of film studies at North Carolina State University. Marcia, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank.
Let's talk with each of you about your favorite films. Marcia, what is it, do you think, about this time of year that makes films sort of nostalgic? Because they're a relatively recent phenomenon in pop culture.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the idea of the holidays when all, you know, families are coming together, there's a lot of kind of emotional investment in this time where people who maybe haven't seen each other in a while or only see each other once a year all gather together. And I think there's this desire to have kind of collective activities that you can share besides just opening presents. And I think especially in our culture, it's become a very commercial enterprise, the holidays, right? It's about gift giving. And holiday movies, I kind of think, allow us to experience a different kind of emotional register, you know, in a collective way.
Yeah.
that can sometimes get at really serious issues. I mean, holiday movies are not all frivolous. So I think that that's one of the reasons that it's important for our culture.
It's that communion we're striving for. It's why we're so disappointed when a loved one doesn't like the thing we like. So if we can find that one movie that most of us like, there's a sense of communion around that we're all one, at least about this film.
Right. But then there's also the fact that many families are deeply dysfunctional. And if they can all gather together and pretend that they're having the Christmas in the movies, somehow it makes their actual family seem better, too.
Laura, what's your favorite?
I have a great fondness for The Man Who Came to Dinner, which is a 1940s Warner Brothers film in which Sheridan Whiteside, a very irascible but greatly beloved radio personality, has to spend the Christmas, his Christmas in a home, a small town Ohio home, because he's broken his hip after giving a talk to a local women's club. So he's forced to spend Christmas with a family not his own.
If I were lovable, that could be me. Let's hear a clip.
She's looking very well, isn't she?
Who?
Countess de Cyanide. Quite a surprise, wasn't it, her dropping in like this?
Yes, it was. Yeah. At this joyous season of the year, when in the hearts of men, now I can't cut that.
Isn't it curious? There was Lorraine, snug as a bug, in somebody's patio in Palm Beach.
Ere the Yuletide season pass.
Now, Sherry, I think we will talk a bit.
Oh, look here, Maggie, just because a friend of mine happens to come out here and spend Christmas with me.
I don't think she happened to come out here, Sherry. I don't think that at all.
Surely you're not suggesting that I had anything to do about it?
Yes, Sherry, I am.
Maggie, you know that one of my cardinal principles is never to interfere in other people's lives. Absolutely never.
And I guess one of the things about that film, too, and many holiday films, is that this is a holiday season. The holiday season is one filled with expectations, and the films often, you know, sort of work against that, about how real life intervenes against or plays against expectation.
Right. And this is a film in which the fantasy of Sheridan Whiteside's cozy Christmas chat is contrasted against his way of manipulating everyone around him, including his beloved secretary, played by Bette Davis, and a host of people who come in for various comic scenes. This is written by Kaufman and Hart. It was a very famous stage play, and every single character gets a funny line or a funny scene. Even someone just coming to the door to make a delivery gets a show-stopping line, making it worthwhile for an actor to play a tiny part if they get that big laugh every single night.
And it's a fantastic cast. I mean, Ann Sheridan and Billy Burke, who, you know, is the Glinda the Good Witch, and Jimmy Durante. And it is cracking good dialogue, start to finish.
Well, and Ann Sheridan is dressed in these fantastic costumes, surrealist-derived Elsa Schiaparelli costumes with, like, buttons that look like clutching hands and stuff. So it really helps the whole movement.
Yeah, it's a time of year when Hollywood can go nuts. All the things that you couldn't possibly put into the other movies, you get to throw them into this one. And the ensemble cast, the idea that we're going to put all these stars together because it's the holidays.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, so, Marcia, we let you pick two. Tell us about your first.
Okay, well, I'm with Laura on the classic studio era Hollywood pick. My pick is Shop Around the Corner, an MGM film directed by Ernst Lubitsch, who is one of the great Hollywood, well, he's a German emigre, but Hollywood directors of the 1930s and 1940s. And this film takes place during the Christmas season. So, you know, like The Man Who Came to Dinner, it takes place that time of year. But it takes place in Depression era Budapest, Hungary, which is kind of strange given that it's Jimmy Stewart and Margaret Sullivan who play the main characters.
Nothing says holidays like the Depression in Hungary.
Exactly. Yeah. But it could be anywhere. It could be Brooklyn. It could be anywhere in the United States. The location is kind of besides the point. But it's a very subdued screwball comedy, and it's a romance. And so the premise is that that Jimmy Stewart's character and Margaret Sullivan's character, who work together in the shop and have these contentious relationships with each other, are actually pen pals with each other without knowing who they are. And they have fallen in love with each other on paper, but in terms of their day-to-day relations, don't get along together at all. And of course, over the course of the film, you know, by the end, by Christmas Eve, they come to realize, you know, who the other is. And what is so lovely about it in terms of the idea is that sometimes you don't know what's right under your nose, and it takes a revelation.
Tell me, who is the girl?
Oh, you know that girl I was corresponding with?
Oh, yes, about the cultural subjects.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. Well, after a while, we got on the subject of love. Naturally, on a very cultural level.
Why, what else can you do in a letter?
She is the most wonderful girl in the world.
Is she pretty?
She has such ideals and such a viewpoint on things that she's so far above all the girls you meet today, there's just no comparison.
So she's not so very pretty.
Oh, well, don't say that.
I'm sorry. The main thing is that you like her.
Hope I will.
What do you mean? You love a girl and you don't know if you like her?
Well, it's just the question. Haven't met her yet.
Why? You haven't met her yet?
No. I keep postponing it and postponing it. I'm scared. You see, this girl thinks I'm the most wonderful person in the world, and after all, the chance she might be disappointed.
Yes, there's a chance.
Yeah, on the other hand...
Now, you might be disappointed, too.
And don't dare think about it. Parabitch, did you ever get a bonus?
Yes, once.
Yeah. You know, the boss hands you the envelope. Mm-hmm. You wonder how much is in it. You don't want to open it. Mm-hmm. As long as the envelope's closed, you're a millionaire.
Oh,
you keep postponing that moment, and you can't postpone it forever.
There we go. And you know Jimmy Stewart. It's just going to have to work, right?
Oh, of course. But, you know, it's that idea, that insecurity, that it's not going to work. And, you know, what Lubitsch is so great about is having these very romantic films that are just filled with kind of comedy and a little bit of darkness as well. And, you know, this film, which is not as widely known to say It's a Wonderful Life, but it was remade as In the Good Old Summertime with Judy Garland in the late 1940s. And then again, as You've Got Mail, with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
Yeah, I was going to say this has got that whole You Got Mail feel.
Yep, exactly. So this is the origin of it.
Well, wonderful. So that's a sweet film, and then of course you also love Gremlins.
Christmas carolers. I hate Christmas carolers. Screeching voice, no blue snippers.
I warned you, Brent.
Merry Christmas, Marcia.
Thank you, Frank. Yeah, I mean, what's so fun about Gremlins, what I realized when I was thinking about holiday films is so many of them are actually about the economy and about commercialism. And, I mean, that's no accident given, I think, the state of the way we celebrate the holidays in this country. And, you know, Gremlins is about, you know, this man looking for this, finding this perfect Christmas gift for his son. And it comes with all of these warnings, what you can't do, you know, the three rules of engagement with the little critter that that ends up propagating these little monsters, as it were. And so, I mean, it's a very funny, playful, enjoyable take on Christmas.
Well, and movies are really made for the holidays in the sense that movies have to play against cultural norms and the stuff we expect, all of the expect. We talked about this a second ago. So that it's perfect to do holiday movies. I mean, again, the more outrageous and dark you can make it, in a sense, the better it is. But then the sweeter it is. So you've got a huge range that I guess you don't really have the rest of the year, Laura, would you say?
Maybe that's true. I mean, as you think about a lot of classic Christmas movies, they're kind of disturbing, like Miracle on 34th Street. Natalie Wood is such a sad little girl. It kind of almost overwhelms the joy that we're supposed to feel at the discovery of Santa Claus.
Well, and I think because so much emotional and psychological investment is appended to the idea of Christmas and the holidays, that it can be used. I mean, a lot of films end with a Christmas scene, even though they're not explicitly Christmas movies, because they evoke for all of us such an easy emotional idea and all of these disappointments and expectations and all of that stuff.
On the State of Things today, talking about holiday favorites with my guest, Marcia Gordon, a professor of film studies at North Carolina State. And Laura Boyes is with us, film curator at North Carolina Museum of Art. And we'll hear staff favorites. What do the folks here at WUNC think is their favorite film? We'll talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay with us.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, today talking about a favorite tradition of the holiday, viewing annual holiday movies. Marcia Gordon is a film studies professor at North Carolina State. Laura Boyes is film curator at North Carolina Museum of Art. And we also asked several of our colleagues here at WUNC to weigh in with their favorite holiday films. Let's listen to one right now.
My name is Nicole Campbell, and I'm a producer on The State of Things. My favorite holiday movie is Elf. My favorite scene from the movie is when Buddy goes into the Christmas store thinking that he's going to see the real Santa, who he knows from the North Pole. But he gets there and it's a fake Santa, and he tells him that he's not the real Santa because he smells like beef and cheese.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Look, I'm not kidding.
You're a fake.
I'm a fake?
Yes.
How'd you like to be dead? Huh? No, he's kidding.
You stink.
I think you're going to have a good Christmas, all right?
You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.
Okay. Go.
Piece of pasta!
I actually felt kind of weird when I realized that my favorite movie was Elf. It was kind of embarrassing.
There you go. Nicole Campbell, a producer here on The State of Things. Loving Elf.
Yeah, well, I mean, Elf is a very endearing film. It has, on the one hand, the kind of charming premise of, like, the alien coming from another planet and getting to discover Earth with new eyes because the Will Ferrell character has been raised by elves in the North Pole and then, you know, comes to New York to find his father, played by James Caan, which, you know, is a wonderful comic pairing. But then, you know, it's also about a real 21st century idea, which is, you know, so many families now are blended, are complicated, multiple marriages, kids, you know, from different marriages, adopted. And this is really a film about accepting this new person into your family and integrating them into your family during the holidays. And, of course, the difference is exaggerated and played comedically, but it also has this other, I think, layer to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a couple of staffers who actually picked Home Alone. Let's listen.
My name is Jorge Valencia, and I cover the state capitol for WUNC. My favorite Christmas movie is Home Alone. I grew up in Bogota, Colombia, and it doesn't snow there because it's very close to the equator. And one of the many things that I liked about the movie was that I'm pretty sure it was the first time that I saw snow.
My name is Carol Jackson. I'm the digital news editor for our website, and my favorite Christmas movie is Home Alone. And we weren't allowed to watch movies very much growing up. We weren't allowed to watch TV. We did watch, you know, the holiday specials, and so it's made the holiday season really cool. But now that I have a kid, he's 11, he never wanted to watch movies. So I was like, oh, I'd try this, I'd try that. So we finally found Home Alone. And the first time we watched it the whole way through, and then we turned back and started again at the very beginning. But the scene that we love the most is the little boy stuck inside his house, and the two bad guys are outside the back door, and they're trying to get inside the house. And Joe Pesci comes up and he knocks on the door.
We know that you're in there.
It's Santa Claus and his elf.
Get off my property.
And the scene ends with Daniel Stern with his head through the cat entrance while the little boy shoots his BB gun and shoots Daniel Stern in the head. That's our favorite part.
There we go. And by the way, quintessential public radio staffer, don't you think? Not allowed to watch movies when they were young.
Absolutely. Yeah. The return of the repressed is what I'm thinking. But yeah, I mean, this is, it's such a great story. It's such a fun film. I think, you know, John Hughes wrote the script, and for a certain generation, myself among them, John Hughes was kind of the voice of that generation. I love the kind of premise of the young boy, which is almost a kind of genre of Christmas holiday film, you know, having to, being left behind and having to, you know, ward off these kind of comic villains. And well, so it's not threatening.
Well,
really.
This perfectly segues into the whole Christmas trauma thing, too, being left behind.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Right. And snow.
And snow.
Okay, this next one generated a lot of buzz on the internet, even though it came out several years ago.
My name is Christy Dixon. I work in corporate support at WUNC, and my favorite holiday movie is Love Actually. My favorite storyline in the movie is about this aging rocker, Billy Mack, who he's kind of a washed up rocker, and he goes in to record this Christmas song, and it's terrible, and everybody knows it's terrible, but they know he's going to make a ton of money on this Christmas song. And if everybody buys his single and he can be number one on Christmas Eve to beat out the teeny bopper group Blue, then he will perform the song naked.
This must be a very exciting moment for you, fighting for the Christmas number one. How's it looking so far?
Very bad indeed. Blue are outselling me 5-1, but I'm hoping for a late surge. And if I reach number one, I promise to sing the song stark naked on TV on Christmas Eve.
Do you mean that?
Well, of course I mean it, Michael.
And he does.
I feel it in my fingers.
In my fingers.
I feel it in my toes.
Feel it in my toes, yeah.
Christmas is all around me.
All around
and
me.
So the feeling grows.
I think it helps to name body parts if you're going to sing naked. It's kind of helpful. That was not the, but there were a number of subplots in that film. Interesting that that would be the one you'd kind of latch on to.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a film, I would say, very much of its time. And as much as it's doing this multiple plot, multiple character lines, you know, all-star ensemble cast, which I always think hides sins of script and story, but that all kind of converge together in the end. And I mean, I guess if I were to have to say something nice about it, it's cute.
Well, let me ask this question, though, and Laura, I'll ask it of you. Is there something that we can tell about the time of – I mean, the period in which films are made that tell us more about that era than they do about the holidays or how we feel about
it? Oh, that's absolutely true. Films made in a particular time show so many indications of the period in which they were made that – contemporary people cannot see, and it really takes a retrospective view to be able to really key on to
this. Is this a whole area of film studies, holiday films and their eras?
I think you've just invented it, Frank. It's yours.
I'll do it. Let's listen to another one here.
My name is Freddie Jenkins, and I handle the operations here at WUNC Radio, and I'm also the Friday and Saturday evening host of Back Porch Music. And my favorite holiday film is the 1951 adaptation of Dickens' A Christmas Carol. It's called Scrooge. It was called Scrooge in the UK, but it was released in the US as A Christmas Carol. It's actually a fairly dark movie most of the time. But at the end, after the redemption, after the night visits from the ghosts and the redemption of Scrooge, Alistair Sim, who portrays Scrooge in the film, is just delightful in his rebirth on the morning after. He's dancing around in the bed, dancing around in the bedroom, is just giddy with his housekeeper, who is a bit frightened of him because she's never seen him so happy.
Good morning, sir.
Tell me, what day is it?
What day? What's Christmas Day, Costa?
Christmas Day. Then I haven't missed it. The spirits must have done everything in one night. But of course, they can do anything, can't they? Of course they can.
Are you quiet yourself, sir?
What? I don't know. No, I don't think so. I hope not. What? The curtains are still here. They're still here.
The 1951 adaptation of A Christmas Carol, and that's Freddie Jenkins' favorite, and right on the nose there.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that's requisite for these darker films that have, you know, been taken up as, you know, either because they air on television, because, you know, let's face it, one of the reasons some of these films become holiday classics is not necessarily that they were ever recognized like that. As a matter of fact, many of them were not, you know, very stellar at the box office, but because they got programmed into television. But they need to have some kind of redemptive high note at the end. I mean, otherwise, who's going to watch them around the holidays? I mean, let's face it. But I think, you know, we can be dragged through some pretty serious dark material as long as there's this kind of glimmer of hope coming together at the end.
But I never get tired of A Christmas Carol. I don't care who plays Scrooge, if it's Bill Murray or Michael Caine or Mr. Magoo or Alastair Sim, I'm there. I think it's a fantastic story, and I'm totally there through the darkness and the redemption and the turkey at the end.
It is. Listen, Laura Lee is our latest addition to The State of Things. She's our senior producer and assistant news director, and she takes us up to the 80s with this one. Let's listen.
My name is Laura Lee, and I'm a producer on The State of Things. My favorite Christmas movie is A Christmas Story, and I like it because the narration of the little boy who's the main character is in an adult voice, and he says a lot of things that you remember thinking as a little kid. For example, he really wants a BB gun.
There it is. The holy grail of Christmas gifts, the Red Ryder 200-shot range model air rifle.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified, I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder carbon action 200-shot range model air rifle.
Ooh.
No, shoot your eye out.
Oh, no, it was the classic mother BB gun block. You'll shoot your eye out.
BB guns are dangerous. I don't want anybody shooting his eye out.
Oh, no. You'll shoot your eye out? My mother must have gotten to Miss Shields. There could be no other explanation.
You'll shoot your eye out! You'll shoot your eye out!
And at the end, when he gets it, and it fires back on him, and he hits the ground and says,
oh my God, I shot my eye out!
And I like that because my mom and I use the phrase whenever she says something overly cautious to me, like, take a jacket. I always say back to her as a way of saying you're being overly sensitive. You'll shoot your eye out.
There you go. Laura Lee's favorite on The State of Things. And that one clearly is a holiday classic, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think certainly, again, for a certain generation, and that played a lot on television when I was growing up. I remember watching that with my family. And, you know, the thing about that film is what's really memorable to me are these, like, vignettes, these moments in the film, like the tongue getting stuck to the frozen pole, right? So it has within it all of these great, you know, it's a young boy coming of age story. But, you know, it has some really great kind of, it's both nostalgic and kind of parodic at the same time.
Well, I have a great fondness for this film for a very odd reason. First of all, it's because it's filmed in Cleveland, Ohio, which is my hometown. And when they go to visit Santa Claus, it's at the old Higbee's department store where you used to dress up to go shopping. But also because the evil Santa Claus is played by a cousin of mine named Jeff Gillen. And Jeff was he was an extremely unsuccessful actor who died very young of a heart attack, never knowing that every year his picture would be in the paper, that people would recite his lines over and over again. And it's a topic with our, you know, mom will say, did you see Jeff's picture in the paper today?
This is like a screenplay for another Christmas movie.
Let's listen to what Leonita Inge called her favorite.
I'm Leonita Inge, the changing economy reporter at North Carolina Public Radio, and one of my favorite Christmas movies is The Preacher's Wife. Now, my father loves this movie, and he does not like a lot of movies, but he loved Whitney Houston. And, of course, I love Denzel Washington.
Now, that's what I call good looking. Your daddy used to look like that back in 19...
I've heard it 100 times.
One of my favorite scenes, actually, was when Denzel was trying to bring the preacher and his wife closer together. So he set up a date for them, and the preacher could not go on the date. So He stupidly asked Denzel to escort his wife out for the night. Big mistake.
You take your coat off, you go upstairs, and you take your wife out dancing.
Can't do it. Not tonight.
Henry, you and Julia need this.
I believe in you and me. I believe that we...
You know, it's not a spectacular movie. It's not action-packed, but it's just so special to me and my family. We watch it every year almost, especially my daddy. He loves to watch it.
What I like about the way that, you know, that she's talking about this film is that it's a real reminder of how ritualistic movie going used to be, and now home consumption largely is and can be, and how much a film can take on a kind of life of its own in the kind of symbolic relationship to family and to friends, where you create the ritual of you sit and you watch this film every year, and it becomes something that, you know, that you kind of look forward to and you anticipate. You know exactly what happened. There's no surprises, but it's just about the experience of watching it together and everyone kind of agreeing that this is a film that speaks to their values, their interests.
And I believe it's a remake of an earlier film called The Bishop's Wife with Loretta Young, Cary Grant, and David Niven. And one thing that The Preacher's Wife does is it reimagines the same story for a community that was eliminated from that classic Hollywood era in which there were no Christmas films that were targeted that way. When we talk about Christmas movies, we assume that everyone in the audience is Christian, which is not necessarily true. There's a movie that I only remember vaguely. It's called The Hebrew Hammer, isn't it? In which Adam Goldberg is a Jewish superhero who takes on Christmas as an overwhelming cultural force to try to get the place of other other cultures in the whole Christmas society that probably deserves a shout out.
When was
as well.
When was that made, roughly?
They used to show it on Comedy Central all the time. I think it's a movie from the late 90s, maybe the early 00s.
Wow. Well, taking us right off the rails, as we might expect, if only you knew Alex Granados, you would understand why this would be his favorite.
My favorite Christmas movie growing up was Silent Night, Deadly Night. I never actually saw the movie, but I did see the box. And on the box, there was a chimney with Santa's arm coming out of it. And in Santa's arm was a bloody axe. And that picture scared the Christmas right out of me. I could not think about Santa without picturing a mass murderer.
Alex, by the way, amateur magician, and he does children's Christmas parties and birthday parties. Just want you to know.
Well, I have not seen this particular film, but there is a really fun slasher film about Christmas from 1974 called Black Christmas, which kind of started, I think, a little tiny wave of Christmas horror films. And that's about basically a sorority house that's terrorized over Christmas break. But what's really interesting to me about that film is that the writer and director of Black Christmas is Bob Clark, who directed and co-authored A Christmas Story in 1983. Uh-huh. So there is that gives you a little hint of the kind of darkness underlying A Christmas Story.
The horror film. Okay, so here it is. This is my favorite, and it's not going to be a surprise, but somebody had to do it, and it's me.
Good.
And It's a Wonderful Life.
Mary, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long. Well, you going to throw a rock? Hey, that's pretty good. What'd you wish, Mary?
There you go. Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed.
I mean, this is just, it's a phenomenal film. You know, Frank Capra, this is a film about real things. This is why a film like Love Actually to me seems pretty empty. I mean, this is about working class people having access to capital, to housing. This is about the dark side of capitalist greed. And it's about the value of doing good works and having friends and family around you. So it's about really important things and it's entertaining.
I think it's more relevant today than when it was made, mm-hmm. and it probably accounts for the fact that it came out after World War II, when we were the only industrial power in the world, and all of the things that you just talked about were not as obvious to us.
Right.
The dark side of capitalism, the fact that the finance industry can be so destructive, didn't seem obvious to anybody in 1948, but boy, does it now.
And also, it's because both Frank Capra and James Stewart fought in World War II,
right.
and they came home and they said, we're not the sunny idealists that we were before the war. And they wanted to deal with difficult subjects. And this film was not successful when it first came out. Why is it a Christmas staple? Because it was in the public domain and any TV station could show it without paying anybody any money, because Frank Capra's independent production company went bankrupt.
And the fact that Jimmy Stewart really embodied that sense of foreboding. I mean, that's the other thing about this film. Even if the themes weren't so near and dear to my heart and I didn't think they were so relevant today as they are, the acting in that film and the cinematography, the way it's shot, it is a beautiful film. It's a gorgeous film. And the acting is actually off the charts wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think any film that can, you know, feel at the end like you have this sense of kind of catharsis when you start off with a kind of suicide contemplation on Christmas Eve, which is, you know, let's face it, that's the bare bones plot here, is really pulling off something pretty, pretty brilliant and pretty artfully.
Well, the good news is we can do this again next year. Thank you so much for being with us. Marcia Gordon, professor of film studies at North Carolina State. Laura Boyes, film curator at North Carolina Museum of Art. Thank you both for
being
on
the program. Thank you. It was a lot of
fun. Happy holidays and thank you. And our holiday film spectacular continues in a moment with a new release, Black Nativity. Stay with us.